So we had chapter 10 with Nadab and Abihu offering their strange incense, being killed. And then God talks to Aaron and just Aaron for the only time in Leviticus in chapter 10, Abigail, saying that he needs to differentiate between clean and unclean, the holy and profane. And then that's, we get 11 through 15 about the rules about what is clean and what is unclean. Okay, because, and remember, it's all in context of Nadab and Abihu. You did not want to enter tabernacle if you were unclean because you ran the risk of being smote by God. Okay, so now then we get Leviticus 16. Right, and if you just look quickly at verse 1, it says, now the Lord spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron, when they had approached the presence of the Lord and had died. Okay, so chapter 16 really chronologically happens on the instructions happen in chapter 10, right after chapter 10. Okay, so 11 through 15 are stuck in the middle in our Bible, but 16 happens right after chapter 10. Okay, so on the same day that Nadab and Abihu die, God gives these instructions. Because remember, the day that Nadab and Abihu die, this is the very first day that Aaron offers any sacrifice, right? He was ordained before that, but it was Moses offering the sacrifices, right? So on day one of the sacrificial system, Aaron offers his sacrifices, his sons do it wrong, and they get killed, right? And a dead body is unclean. So now the tabernacle is unclean on day one. Okay, you don't even make it through 24 hours of the system without the tabernacle being defiled. What do you do about it? How do you cleanse the tabernacle? Okay, that's a problem. So then we get chapter 16. This is how we cleanse the tabernacle, what we do if the tabernacle is defiled. Okay, chapters 11 through 15 are stuck in the middle. Because you have to know what is clean and unclean. Not just dead bodies defile the tabernacle. Other things are going to defile the tabernacle as well. So you got to know what those are. Okay? The Day of Atonement. Abner, who I listen to, he calls this the grand reset button. Okay? Day of Atonement is like the, we get to start over. Every year there's a fresh start. Okay? It restarts Israel every year in the model. It cleanses the tabernacle and the people for intentional sin and all other sins and uncleanness that Israel didn't even know about. Okay? Now, this doesn't automatically make you clean if you're a leper, right? You still have your skin disease if you have a persisting disease, or if you, I guess, if you were on your period during Day of Atonement, you're still unclean. It doesn't magically make you clean, but it's a forgiveness of sins and it cleanses the tabernacle. It is a reset. So we get to start all over again, try again. Okay, remember, again, this is a model. You are not saved through the model. It is a picture, okay? But every year that picture, that model is reset and you get another chance to try to do it again.
So in theory, if it hadn't been Nadab and Abihu right away and then the instructions for the reset right away, it probably would have happened at some point.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes.
The need for a reset.
Correct.
Would have come up.
Exactly.
Point, not immediately, even after.
Right.
Whenever.
Right.
Got it out of the way.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yes. So the uncleanness of Israel, remember we talked about this last week, uncleanness is contagious, right? Cleanness is not until Christ. Right, and then he couldn't be unclean, and instead it went the other way. When unclean people touched him, they became clean instead of Jesus becoming unclean. Okay, but all throughout the Old Testament, it's only uncleanness that's contagious, and it's even contagious to stuff. Remember, when you have your period, anything you touch becomes unclean, and anyone who touches anything you touched becomes unclean. So think about it. What if your husband, not knowingly, touched something that you touched and then went to tabernacle, right? Now everything he touches at tabernacle becomes unclean. Now granted, your husband's not going to be wandering through the holy place and the holy of holies, but still, he is bringing his uncleanness unknowingly into the tabernacle, okay? So Israel, there was no way, I'm sure, that you could ever remain 100% clean, okay, or know for a fact that you were 100% clean. Because you could have done something unknowingly and go to tabernacle and spread your uncleanness, okay? Again, this is a model. It doesn't work. The system doesn't work. But it is a picture, and it shows Israel how holy God is. In this chapter, this day is not called Day of Atonement. Okay, we get that from Leviticus 23. Can someone turn there and read for me verse 27? Leviticus 23, 27.
Now on the 10th day of this 7th month is the Day of Atonement. It shall be for you a time of holy convocation, and you shall afflict yourselves and present a food offering to the Lord.
Okay, so there it is called Day of Atonement. In chapter 16, it is not called Day of Atonement, but it is. It's just called, it's not called anything. It just talks about the day that Aaron can go into the Holy of Holies. Okay? It is a Sabbath day, so it didn't matter what day of the week it fell upon. Okay, it was a Sabbath. You were not to work. Okay, it is at the heart of Israel's calendar and life. This was the closest a man ever got to God. Okay, this is the 10th day of the 7th month, which is approximately October. Okay, there. Remember, Israel's on a lunar calendar, so it doesn't match up exactly with our calendar. But it's October-ish. Okay, according to Jewish tradition, okay, this is just tradition, so take it with a grain of salt. All these other things also happened on the 10th day of the 7th month. They believed that was the day that Adam sinned and repented. Okay, how you know that? You don't. Okay, they believed that was the day that Abraham was circumcised on the 10th day of the 7th month. They believed that was the same day that Abraham sacrificed Isaac. And also the day that Moses made atonement for the golden calf and received the second tablets of the law. So they believed all these other things happened on that same 10th day of the 7th month as well. Okay, but no, it's just their tradition. Okay, so the Day of Atonement was the day to purge the tabernacle and all of Israel from all uncleanness. Like we said, Israel's uncleanness made the tabernacle unclean. Okay, so we need to know what's clean and unclean before we get to chapter 16. So that's where chapter 16 is where it was. Chapters 1 through 15 build up to chapter 16 because you have to know about sacrifices, you have to have a priesthood, and you have to know what's clean and unclean for Day of Atonement even to make sense. Okay, so you need chapters 1 through 15 in order to understand chapter 16. And then chapters 17 to 27 flow from this as well. About being holy, and also the feasts. Okay. So because Israel cannot remain clean, we have to have a Day of Atonement. And like Terry said, even if Nadab and Abihu hadn't been struck dead in the tabernacle immediately, Israel's still going to make the tabernacle unclean just because of sin. Okay. Questions before we start reading?
Are you saying those 15 and 16 were given at a different time but inserted here, or they were still given on that same day after Nadab and Abihu?
We're not exactly sure when 11 through 15. I don't think there's a time marker. Then the Lord spoke. So in 16, we get a time. It's after the death of the sons, right? Right. It's possible Moses could have got all of it on the same day. It's not so much that's impossible. But when he went to write it down, if he got the unclean, clean laws either earlier or later, he inserted them in here because you have to know that in order to understand Day of Atonement.
Yeah, for whatever reason, it was still the order God wanted.
Right, 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 exactly. Yep. Anything else? All right, can someone read for me verses 1 through 10 of chapter 16?
Now the Lord spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron, when they had approached the presence of the Lord and died. And the Lord said to Moses, tell your brother Aaron that he shall not enter at any time into the holy place inside the veil, before the mercy seat, which is on the ark, lest he die, for I will appear in the cloud over the mercy seat. Aaron shall enter the holy place with this, with a bull for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. He shall put on the holy linen tunic, and the linen undergarments shall be next to his body, and he shall be girded with the linen sash and attired with the linen turban. These are holy garments. Then he shall bathe his body in water and put them on. And he shall take from the congregation of the sons of Israel 2 male goats for a sin offering and 1 ram for a burnt offering. Then Aaron shall offer the bull for the sin offering, which is for himself, that he may make atonement for himself and for his household. And he shall take the 2 goats and present them before the Lord at the doorway of the tent of meeting. And Aaron shall cast lots for the 2 goats, one lot for the Lord, and the other lot for the scapegoat. Then Aaron shall offer the goat on which the lot for the Lord fell, and make it a sin offering. But the goat on which the lot for the scapegoat fell shall be presented alive before the Lord to make atonement upon it, to send it into the wilderness as the scapegoat.
Okay. So if you notice verse 1 and 2, God is speaking to Moses only. Okay, we said sometimes he speaks to Moses and Aaron. Only one time does he speak to Aaron only. Here he is speaking to Moses only, which is most common, to Moses only. Okay, Moses is really the true mediator between God and man. He stands even higher than Aaron. And remember, we've talked before, Aaron wasn't such a great guy. Okay. This day and these rules are revealed to Moses on the day Nadab and Abihu died, so that no other priest would die in the presence of the Lord. And it's because of this correlation that some people think that Nadab and Abihu actually tried to go into the Holy of Holies. Okay. In chapter 10, it says they offered strange fire, so the emphasis seems to be on the incense that they offered, either the coals, we talked about it, or the incense or whatever. But because of this correlation where it verse 1 says Nadab and Abihu died, and it says they approached the presence of the Lord, and then the first thing that God says to Aaron is don't go into the Holy of Holies. Okay, so that's why some people think that Nadab and Abihu tried to go into the Holy of Holies and God says not a good idea, you're gonna die. Don't do that.
Like you said, this was, so they're doing this because of the sons. Right. To now offer this because they
have defiled the tabernacle. So that's immediate context. But like Terry said, for the model to work, you needed a day of atonement, even if Nadab and Abihu hadn't done what they did.
Okay.
Because uncleanness is going to come into the tabernacle regardless. Okay. It's just it gives it a sense of urgency and importance that it is related to the death of Nadab and Abihu, that something so drastic happened immediately.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. Okay, so we don't want any other priest to die. So Moses gives this warning to Aaron, don't enter into the Holy of Holies. Okay, so the Nadab and Abihu have defiled the tabernacle, and the tabernacle needs to be made clean again. Okay. The crazy thing is, right, this is not done on an as-needed basis, right? It's not like, oh, Nadab and Abihu defile the temple, let's clean it tomorrow, cleanse it tomorrow. No, this is once a year. So if on the 11th day of the 7th month, the tabernacle is defiled, let's say the altar burnt offering is defiled, it is now unclean. That means that all sacrifices offered on it are unclean, which means they don't really count until next year when it is cleansed. Okay, again, it's a model. The system doesn't work. Okay, you are not saved through the model. It is a picture. Right, they would have kept.
Regardless of whether they knew.
Right.
They might have not known it was defiled, but
right.
They knew it. Right,
right.
Like the guy whose wife had a period.
Right, right.
Of course, they didn't get in there. Well,
They might have touched the altar burnt offering.
Right. So anything that wasn't behind the veil.
Yeah. Right.
Anything that was made unclean, even outside the veil, would have been unclean.
And what if a priest could have had a wife? Right? And then he could even be in the holy place, you know? So, I mean, there are many ways for things to become unclean. I mean, a lizard, right, could crawl up and die on the table of showbread. You know, I mean, lots of things could be done to make things unclean.
But they didn't quit doing the sacrifices.
No, they wouldn't have.
For, you know, right. 364 days.
Right, right, right. But it's just a reset once a year, okay?
Like, you mean like fully, I guess, fully cleaned,
mm-hmm.
once a year.
Right, and when we're talking cleanse, we are not talking about spring cleaning where they go and scrub it, right? This is all about sprinkling of blood. It's all symbolic. It's not, you know, cleansed as in it is clean versus dirty. This is a clean versus unclean in the sight of God, okay? And blood is what cleanses. Blood is what makes it clean. Okay, it says God tells Moses to tell Aaron, right, that he shall not enter at any time. The Hebrew phrase here is very strong, and it could be interpreted as to mean never without exception. Like, you are never, ever, ever, ever to go in. Now, we do know, if you look at verse 3, it then says Aaron shall enter. Okay, so there is one exception, but it is on no account do you go in to the Holy of Holies. Okay, never go in. There is one exception, and you have to do it exactly God's way or you're in trouble, right? Because it says, or he will die like his sons. Okay, the reason Aaron can't go into the Holy of Holies is also given. It says, before the mercy seat, which is on the ark, for I will appear in the cloud over the mercy seat. Okay, so the Holy of the Holies is where the mercy seat is, and that is where God appears in a cloud. Okay. Now, remember, God had come to dwell with Israel. And there's the phrase, what is it? Familiarity breeds contempt or something like that. Okay, so the point is, God is now among you, but you cannot just get so comfortable with God that he's just another, you know, whatever, and we can just treat him any way we want. No, you have to treat God with the same reverence and the same fear that you did when he was thunder and lightning on the top of Mount Sinai, right? Or when he walked before you in the cloud and the fire leading you through the Red Sea. So you cannot just become so familiar with God that you just waltz into his presence anytime you want, okay? There is fear, there is reverence, there is awe. So God dwells with Israel, but he is still holy God.
And the mercy seat is like
it's the lid. Mm-hmm, with the cherubs on it. Yes, exactly. It's the lid of the ark and with the two cherubs on it. Okay, the high priest is mediator between God and man, so he has direct access to God one day a year. All right, he is the main mediator, but he only has direct access to God one day a year, as opposed to us, who we have access anytime we want. Okay?
How long were they back there in the Holy of Holies?
Probably as short as absolutely possible would be my guess. I mean, according to the text, and I didn't find anything different, it sounds like he goes back there twice. He offers the bull, which is his sacrifice, takes the blood back there, sprinkles it. Then he comes out, offers the ram, then takes the blood. That's for the people, takes the blood back and sacrifices. Whether he did the sacrifices and then took both bloods back at the same time, I don't know. The text seems to me to say that he goes back twice. Okay, but oh, I'm a bull and then a goat. I'm sorry. Okay. Not the ram. The ram is for a burnt offering. It's the bull for himself as a sin offering, then the goat for the people as a sin offering.
Okay,
so two sin offerings, and both the blood is taken back.
Oh, right.
Okay,
oh,
right? And he only has to sprinkle the blood 7 times, so a total of 14 times. That I don't know. Right, but regardless, it wouldn't take... You're not back there for 20 minutes, you know. And I would think that you go in with much fear and trembling and get out of there as fast as you can.
But then he goes out and then, does then he do the two goat thing? And then
yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. We'll get there. We're on verse 2. We're jumping ahead of ourselves. Okay. So verse 3 through 5, this is a summary of the sacrifices that we have to bring, right? So when Aaron does enter the holy place one day a year, these are the very specific things he has to do. He brings a bull for his sin offering and a ram for his sin for his burnt offering. Okay? And then if you look at verse 5, he shall take from the congregation of the sons of Israel two goats for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. Okay, so we have one of the bull, well, the bull is going to be killed. One of the goats is going to be killed for sin offerings. And then they both have, there are two rams for burnt offerings, one for the priest, one for the people. Okay. Before he entered the Holy of Holies, the high priest had to bathe, which would make sense. He has to make sure he's clean, right? And we're not talking about clean from dirt. It's a symbolic clean. Okay, and he put on special clothes. If you notice, these are not his normal high priest outfit that we studied in Exodus. Verse 4, he shall put on the holy linen tunic. The linen undergarments shall be next to his body. He shall be girded with a linen sash and attired with a linen turban. Okay, so this is much simpler. There's no breastpiece. There's no plate on his head that says holy to the Lord. There's no ephod. It's very plain. These are simple, plain, white clothes, more like the clothes of a slave. So when he goes before God, he is not dressed up in all his ornate clothing. It is simple, all linen, right? Just a tunic, underwear, a sash, and a hat. Okay? That's all he has, all made of linen. Right. And it shows his humble position, right? He is high priest. Technically, he's on the top of the pile in relation to all of Israel. But when he comes before God, he is just like anyone else. He needs forgiveness of sin as well. He is a servant of God just as well, in need of forgiveness. And his clothes symbolize that. Okay. He comes very plain and humble before the Lord. Then verses 6 through 10 give us a short summary of what's going to happen that day, and then the rest of the chapter kind of expounds on it, okay? Because verse 6 says he's going to offer a bull for the sin offering, which is for himself, and then it talks about what he does with the two goats, okay? So first, he's going to sacrifice, and we're going to learn more about the sacrifice in verse 11, and then he has to determine which goat will be a sin offering and which goat will be the scapegoat. Okay, so it says that lots are cast. We're not exactly sure how this was done, right? It could have been yes, no stones, you know, and you ask a question, is this one the offering? And then you cast the stone, and then it's a yes or a no, and then it chooses which one.
Like the old
eight ball? Yeah, kind of.
Not only older people,
or one of the commentaries says it's possible that there were two stones, one that said to the Lord, right, and one that said scapegoat, or Azazel is the Hebrew on it, right? And the priest would draw it out and place it on the heads of the goats so then everyone could see which one is going to be sacrificed and which one is going to be the scapegoat. Okay, but regardless of what they did, right, lots were cast, and one is chosen to be sacrificed and one is chosen to be the scapegoat, and we will talk about that more when we get later in the passage, talks about the scapegoat. Azazel.
Azazel. I have to go into my notes to see some of the confusion. One of them says scapegoat.
Yes, we will talk about what that word means also later on. Okay. Questions, verses 1 through 10.
This is just an observation. I think it's interesting that whenever he lists the order of when of the offerings, he always seems to say a sin offering and then the burnt offering. And it just struck me when I was looking back at some of these other ones that's pretty much, it seems like most of the time, the sin offering,
yes,
and then the burnt. So you're cleansing, you're taking care of the sin, and then you're offering.
Right, the worship sacrifice, right. Exactly. Yes. All right, can someone read for me verses 11 through 19?
Aaron shall present the bull as a sin offering for himself and shall make atonement for himself and for his house. He shall kill the bull as a sin offering for himself, and he shall take a censer full of coals of fire from the altar before the Lord, and two handfuls of sweet incense beaten small. And he shall bring it inside the veil, and put the incense on the fire before the Lord, and the cloud of the incense may cover the mercy seat that is over the testimony, so that he does not die. And he shall take some of the blood of the bull and sprinkle it with his finger on the front of the mercy seat on the east side, and in the front of the mercy seat he shall sprinkle some of the blood in his finger with his finger seven times. Then he shall kill the goat of the sin offering that is for the people, and bring its blood inside the veil, and do with its blood as he did with the blood of the bull, sprinkling it over the mercy seat and in front of the mercy seat. Thus he shall make atonement for the holy place because of the uncleanness of the people of Israel, and because of their transgressions, all their sins. And so he shall do for the tent of meeting, with which dwells with them in the midst of their uncleanness. No one may be in the tent of meeting from the time he enters to make atonement in the holy place until he comes out and has made atonement for himself and for his house and for all the assembly of Israel. Then he shall go out to the altar that is before the Lord and make atonement for it, and shall take some of the blood of the bull and some of the blood of the goat and put it on the horns of the altar all around. And he shall sprinkle some of the blood on it with his finger seven times and cleanse it and consecrate it from the uncleanness of the people of Israel.
Okay, so now we get more of the details of what actually happens that day. Okay, so the very first thing that happens is the high priest has to make the sin offering for himself. Okay, again, this is a grand reset. So the priests have to have their sins dealt with. Okay, now they're in the, when we studied the sin offering, if the high priest sins, there is a way for him to, you know, offer a sacrifice. But this is for everything he didn't know about, all the sin, all the uncleanness, everything else, intentional sins. Okay, if you look at verse 11, it says for himself three times. The bull of the sin offering, which is for himself, make atonement for himself. The end, he shall slaughter the bull of sin offering, which is for himself. Okay, the high priest is another human, just like you and me, who sins and is in desperate need of forgiveness. Okay, so it emphasizes that he is a sinner too, and he has to have his sin taken care of. Yes?
Before.
Yes.
Unintentional
sins.
Yes.
Yes.
Sacrifice for intentional sin, right?
Until Day of Atonement. Yes, so we'll get there. There's a word that makes commentators believe that it includes intentional sins as well.
So this verse, when the high priest says for himself, is unintentional.
I would say all of the Day of Atonement cleanses all sins.
Okay.
Yes, because it's like you get to start over again, mm-hmm. Okay? And so if you had done something intentional, and we talked about this before, a lot of the grievous unintentional or intentional sins would have carried a death penalty with it.
Right.
So you might already be dead, right? But before you get to Day of Atonement. But if there was something that you had done intentionally, right, that can be forgiven, covered on Day of Atonement. Okay. And again, remember, sin that we're talking about is violations of the covenant or of the law. Okay, their understanding of sin was not the same as our understanding of sin, which is why the Sermon on the Mount was so groundbreaking, right? Because it's not just murdering someone, right? It's hating them in your heart. It's not just committing adultery. It's the lust in your heart, right? So they would have understood it as, oh, well, as long as I don't actually commit adultery, then I'm fine. Okay, I have not sinned. Okay. So this offering is very similar to the sin offering that is prescribed for the high priest in chapter 4. The difference is where the blood is taken. If you remember in chapter 4, when the high priest has to offer a sin offering for himself, he would sprinkle the blood before the veil, before the curtain. Okay, he was not to go beyond the curtain. So now the blood is taken past the curtain into the very Holy of Holies. Okay, verse 12 and 13, this is how he goes into the Holy of Holies. He's to take a fire pan full of coals of fire from the altar. So from the burnt altar, he takes the coals from there. He puts incense two handfuls, and I'm sure, right? Especially after Nadab and Abihu, when Aaron does this, I am sure he is very, very careful to do exactly what God has said, to make sure the incense is perfect, to make sure he has exactly two handfuls, or whatever the prescribed, you know, amount is, that he puts the incense on. Putting the incense on the coals would create a smoke. Okay? And it says that at verse 13, that the cloud of incense may cover the mercy seat. Okay? So there are two ideas of why he had to do this. It was either to conceal, right? Well, basically they're both the same. To conceal, to make it cloudy in the Holy of Holies. Remember, this is not a very large room, the Holy of Holies. And it's to prevent the high priest from having direct access to God, because that is where God is. So to protect him from seeing God or protect him from the presence of God, he had to make it smoky in there. Okay? All right. So then, after he does that, verse 14, he shall take some of the blood of the bull, sprinkle it with his finger on the mercy seat on the east side. Also in front of the mercy seat, he shall sprinkle some of the blood with the finger seven times. Okay, so the blood is sprinkled seven times on the east side of the mercy seat. This is the high point of the day, though ironically, no one is allowed to witness it. Right? It's only the high priest all by himself in the Holy of Holies. But this is where the cleansing starts. First, the thing that is cleansed is the Ark of the Covenant, the mercy seat in the Holy of Holies. And this is what really sets this day apart. The blood on the mercy seat indicated that Israel's sin was atoned for by substitutionary death. Okay. Now, if we remember our tabernacle geography, right? Do we remember which way the tabernacle faces? East, okay? So if you're walking into the tabernacle, you're going which direction? West, okay? So the priest, he goes west, and he goes past the veil, right? Do we remember what's on the veil? The cherubim. Do you remember what those reminded us of? The Garden of Eden, okay? So one day a year, it's like the high priest gets to re-enter the Garden of Eden. He goes past the menorah, which some people view as a symbolic of the tree of life, goes past the cherubim into the very presence of God, right? He is walking westward towards God. But then he starts the cleansing process, and we'll see the cleansing process kind of moves sin eastward, okay, and out, all right? So we start with blood on the mercy seat. So it is like the high priest once a year gets to re-enter the Garden of Eden. And that is where he gets to worship God. And this is God's way of doing things. This is how he has prescribed it. Okay.
Could I yes. Use that in like a short summary? Yeah. It's like almost a symbolic reversal of
yes.
Eastward.
Yes. And it's a symbolic reversal of the Garden of Eden, right? Being expelled from the Garden of Eden, right? Adam and Eve were expelled eastward, okay? Now God has finally, for the very first time, right, made a way that man can come back. Because since Genesis 3, there has not been a prescribed way to come back to God. Now we know God has spoken to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, you know, Job was saved. So we know God had his people picked out, but until the tabernacle, there was no prescribed way of this is what you do. This is how you can be made right with God. We even know Noah had some knowledge of sacrifice. Cain and Abel had, you know, so, but this is the first time that something is actually written down and there is a way to be reconciled with God. Okay, so this is man can enter, one man, once a year, can quote-unquote re-enter the Garden of Eden and have fellowship with God. Okay, but like I said, it was probably for a very short time. Do you have a question?
I'm trying to picture my, so when he entered past the curtain.
Yeah.
And he took the blood in. The first thing he gets to is the east side.
Yes.
He doesn't have to go around.
No, he doesn't.
Go to the back side and
no.
Okay.
Nope.
I'm just making
Yes.
Yes.
Because right, he's walking west, but it's going to be the east side of the arc that he's going to come to first. And so he just, like I said, I am sure, and you know, they say that he had bells on his robe and a rope around his ankle is tradition. Tradition says the bells, the Bible says the rope is tradition, right? Because if he did it wrong, he could die, and you better believe no one's going in there after him. So they would just pull him out. And so I am sure that he went in with fear and trembling and was in there probably as little time as it took to do what he needed to do properly. Right? I'm sure he made sure he did a complete job of it, but he also would have wanted to get out. Because remember, this is all in the context of Nadab and Abihu. So they have seen how God reacts when you don't do it his way, when you don't do things properly. Okay.
And he went in more than once, right?
Yes, he went in. I believe he went in twice. He went in with the bull, because then in verse 15 it says, then he shall slaughter. Right. So he kills the bull. He takes the blood in, right? Then he'll come back out and he'll kill the goat, one of the goats, the goat that was chosen to be the sacrificial goat, and then he'll take that blood in. Yes.
So he, okay, because it says on the east side.
Yes.
And in front of the mercy seat. So is the front then
the east west side?
So he sprinkles it twice on the east side, you're saying. Because it says sprinkles with his finger on the mercy seat on the east side and
also in front of the mercy seat. But see, in my head, that's both the same side. So some has to get on top, but then some is just going to be sprinkled on the front of it. It's going to get both places. It's how I would interpret it.
Both of them are front, but
yes.
It's just interesting that it's twice he says it.
Right. Well, and because he says it also for about the goat too, the same thing. Okay.
Question about the rope and the bells thing. You said the bells was
biblical.
The bells are?
I believe, I'm pretty sure, because they had the bells and the pomegranate.
But the rope isn't.
Is tradition. It doesn't ever say in the Bible that the high priest had a rope tied around his ankle, but that is Jewish tradition. It's not, just us making it up.
That's
yes.
What I thought you said, but I was like,
yes, the rope is Jewish tradition. Okay.
What verse mentions east? I was trying to find that in my
14. It says, with his finger on the front of the mercy seat on the east side. And then again.
Also in front of the mercy seat.
The mercy seat.
I was reading too fast. I was hoping east.
Okay, so verse 15, like we said, he does the same thing with the goat. That's the sin offering. Okay, he slaughters it, and then he brings its blood inside the veil, and he does the same thing, sprinkles it on the mercy seat. Okay, so the bull, again, is for himself, and then the goat is for the people. Verse 16. That's beautiful. No, it's fine. Verse 16, he shall make atonement for the holy place because of the impurities of the sons of Israel and because of their transgressions in regard to all their sins. Thus he shall do for the tent of meeting which abides with them in the midst of their impurities. Okay, so once he is done cleansing the holy of holies, he does the same thing for the holy place. If we go to Exodus, can someone read for me chapter 30, verse 10? Exodus chapter 30, verse 10.
Aaron shall make atonement on its horns once a year. He shall make atonement on it with the blood of the sin offering of atonement once a year throughout your generations. It is most holy to you.
Okay, so this, if you look at the top of chapter 30, is talking about the altar of incense. Okay, so the altar of incense was in the holy place, one of the pieces of furniture. It was actually right in front of the veil, right? And so here it says that Aaron has to make atonement for the altar of incense and put blood on its horns, okay? So the blood was not only for the mercy seat, the blood is also going to be put on the altar of incense, and then I would assume all the other pieces of furniture in the tabernacle as well, because it says he makes atonement for the holy place And end of 16, thus he shall do for the tent of meeting, right? He is cleansing the holy place and the tabernacle as a whole. Okay? The whole tabernacle has to be cleansed so that God can remain. Israel's uncleanness is contagious and contaminates everything, right? That's what it says, which abides with them in the midst of their impurities. Middle of 16, because of the impurities of the sons of Israel and because of their transgressions in regard to all their sins. Okay? That word transgressions, this is the strongest word for sin, the most grievous word for sin in the Old Testament. Okay? It is a covenant violation, a breach of relationship, and it's because this word is used that they believe that these cleansing and these sacrifices cover intentional sin as well.
Ooh, okay.
Okay.
You said that was verse 16?
Yes.
So now pause so that...
Yes, that's fine. Verse 16, it says, because of their transgressions in regard to all their sins. I don't know if everyone has...
It says Israelites' impurities and rebellious acts.
There you go. Rebellious acts would be the transgressions. And that is a... helps us in English put a stronger emphasis on that word. But
that makes it sound a little more
intentional. Yeah. But it is a covenant violation, a breach of relationship, okay? Which is not just an oopsies. It's a, you know, more intentional. Okay? So intentional sins are atoned for and the tabernacle is cleansed to allow God's presence to reside. Okay. Forgiveness was offered for everything on this day, so the blood has to be taken all the way into the very presence of God. Throughout the year, the blood, the furthest the blood goes is before the veil, right? If it's just a Joe Schmo that sins, right, the blood is just on the burnt altar, burnt offering. But if it's the high priest, then the blood, or the whole nation, then the blood goes into the holy place, but is only before the altar, or before the veil. Okay, Day of Atonement, the blood goes into the very presence of God. Okay. Verse 17, when he goes in to make atonement in the holy place, no one shall be in the tent of meeting until he comes out, that he may make atonement for himself and for his household and for all the assembly of Israel. Okay, so the high priest had to go in alone. There couldn't even be another priest waiting for him in the holy place. Okay, he was to be in the tabernacle all by himself. And I'm sure everyone held their breath until he came out again. I mean, just
you mean
the tent,
not
the courtyard. Yes, correct. Okay. Okay, there is only one mediator between God and man, right? And 1 Timothy 2:5 tells us that that is Jesus. 1 Timothy 2:5, right? In the Old Testament, it's a high priest. We now have a better high priest, and we still only have one mediator.
So was it just Aaron then, because he was the highest priest, would do the atonement? Was that the only person then?
For this generation, then it would have been Eleazar, then it would have been his son, and it would have been passed down. Was Aaron until he died and passed the high priestship on to Eleazar.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. But it, so, yes. So, Aaron would have done it every year. It would not have switched.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, at least that year up here, he could get a little bit slightly more comfortable with what he had to do.
Yes. He would at least know what he's doing. I'm sure.
It's probably still fearful.
Maybe comfort was not the best choice.
Right. But yes, he would at least know it would have been, okay, I've done this before. At least I'm not, you know, at least I know the process to go through.
I didn't die last year, maybe I won't
die. Yeah.
Right.
It's familiar. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Verse 18 and 19. Then he shall go out to the altar that is before the Lord and make atonement for it. And shall take some of the blood of the bull and the blood of the goat and put it on the horns of the altar on all sides. With his finger he shall sprinkle some of the blood on it seven times and cleanse it from the impurities of the sons of Israel to consecrate it. Okay, so first we start with the mercy seat, then we cleanse the holy place, and now the burnt altar. Okay, it has to be cleansed from Israel's uncleanness as well. Like I said, a sacrifice offered on an unclean altar is unclean. Okay, and notice, God's house is cleansed from the inside out. and the sin or the uncleanness is like it's moving eastward, right? The priest goes westward into God's presence, and the clean sin and uncleanness is moving eastward, moving out. And we're going to see that even more fully when the sin is placed on the scapegoat. And which direction does the scapegoat go?
East.
He goes out. He's sent out into the wilderness. Okay? So it's...
Sorry, just remind me, because I don't have a map in front of me. The burnt altar is outside of the holy place.
Yes. Well, yeah, so you would have the tent, the actual tent. Then you would have the laver, the bronze basin, and then you would have the burnt offering, and then you would have the gate.
Right.
Yep. It's all kind of in just in a line. Yep. Okay, so everything moves east. So the Day of Atonement, the purpose is to move all the uncleanness and sin out. Get it gone. Questions?
Why is the reason for the scapegoat?
Yep, we'll get there. Oh. We'll get there. Good question. That's next. Okay, anything else?
Kind of like with us, our heart needs to be changed first, and then it works its way.
Right, and then, and then it changes our actions. Yeah, good example. All right, can someone read for me just verses 20 to 22?
When he finishes atoning for the holy place and the tent of meeting and the altar, he shall offer the live goat. And Aaron shall lay both of his hands on the head of the live goat, and confess over it all of the. Sorry, I'm reading too fast.
That's okay.
Confess over it all the iniquities of the son of Israel and all their transgression in regard to all their sins, and he shall lay them on the head of the goat and send it away into the wilderness by the hand of the man who stands in readiness. Is that it?
One more.
The goat shall bear on itself all their iniquities. Okay. To their solitary land, and he shall release the goat in the wilderness.
Okay. So once everything has been cleansed, right, the priests, the tabernacle, the people, then the scapegoat is offered live, okay? And this is a picture of the permanent removal of sin, okay? This part of the Day of Atonement is public and can be watched by everyone, right? I suppose the sacrifices, the killing of the bull and the goat can be watched as well, but the main part of the high priest cleansing everything, right? No one sees that. You don't see anything until the high priest comes out. But the scapegoat is going to be a very public picture to all of Israel. This is the part of the Day of Atonement that they can witness and they can watch.
What did you say symbolized? How did you word that again?
Permanent removal of sin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So verse 21. Aaron shall lay both of his hands. Okay, if you remember on a normal sacrifice, you put your hand on the sacrifice, but typically it was one hand. Okay, Aaron is putting both of his hands on the sacrifice. Okay, possibly, we're not sure why because it doesn't say exactly, right? It's possibly because the intentional sins are being transferred as well, or it could be just because this is the entire nation's sins. Okay, this is not just Aaron's sins, or if you're doing it for your own sin offering, you know, your sins. This is Aaron is offering this scapegoat for the entire nation's sins. And notice, he has to confess over all the iniquities of the sons of Israel and all their transgressions in regard to all their sins. Okay, notice that's very comprehensive. All, three times. Confess over all the iniquities of the sons of Israel, all their transgressions, all their sins. So every kind of breach of anything. Now, can he specifically confess everything? No, right? He would be there all year. Right. It's going to be a blanket confession. But he is to confess over this scapegoat. Okay. Again, iniquities, transgressions, sins, three words for sin. This is the comprehensive nature of Israel's sinfulness. They are utterly sinful and in desperate need of forgiveness. Okay, and this is the day that all of that can be taken care of. So all the sins are quote-unquote transferred to this scapegoat, and then it is sent away into the wilderness or a solitary land, it says in verse 22. Okay, this is the furthest region, far, far away, the land of cutting off. Okay, and this is very reminiscent. I'm sure David had this in mind. Psalm 103. Okay, when somebody read Psalm 103, verse 12. Someone can turn there and read that. Or if somebody knows it, Psalm 103, verse 12.
As far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from us.
Okay, so that is the picture here, that this goat has now become the living representation of all your sin. Right? And what happens to it? It is sent far away. It is expelled from the camp, right? It starts in the tabernacle, so the only direction for it to go is east, right? Because it has to go out the door, the gateway of the tabernacle or the temple later on, right? And it is sent out into the wilderness. According to Jewish tradition, the goat was often thrown off a cliff so that it couldn't wander back into camp unintentionally.
They wouldn't go anywhere. So that's like, what's my next one?
Right. Well, because you don't want the scapegoat wandering back into camp, right? So it would be led out into the wilderness, and then tradition says that they would then just push it off a cliff so that it couldn't come back.
I was going to ask, how, if, you know, if you're out in the wilderness or the goat is out, how, if somebody, like,
right,
run a shepherd
came
on it, how would they know that this is what that goat is?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. No.
How would you say they push it off a cliff?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure, yeah, they didn't.
It's just not offered in the presence of everybody.
Right, well, I mean, and God doesn't say specifically to kill it. But the idea, right, if you're sending a goat off into the wilderness, it's going to get eaten by something. I mean, it's going to end up dead, right? So they might have just hurried that process on a little bit to make sure that it didn't come back.
I thought they were out in the wilderness and stuff, and there weren't no goat or no...
Oh, there would have been cliffs. It's a very rugged land out there. Yeah. It's not just flat desert. It's not. Yeah, no. It's rugged land. Okay? So the idea is that Israel's sin is permanently removed. Okay? Now, this term, Azazel, which your Bible translates it that way? Okay. Okay. Back in verse 8. Okay. Well, I mean, Kyle and Becky are back there, so.
Oh, okay.
It's my husband. All right, so this word, Azazel, they are not 100% sure what this word means. Okay? So, the most likely explanation is that it is a combination in the Hebrew of the word goat and the word to go away. So just literally, it's the goat that goes away. Okay, and this is where we get our English translation scapegoat from. Okay, the goat that escapes, that goes away. Okay.
My Bible has three different...
Yes, there's... Okay. So then it can also mean entire removal or to drive away to utter destruction. Okay, so it's the, this goat, he goes away utterly, far away. It is totally destroyed. Okay, third, it could refer to the location where the goat is going. Okay, it could, right, and all these possibilities is because we don't know how the etymology of the word, where the word came from, what combination. So there are all these other words that sound similar, and that's where all these theories come from. Okay, so it could mean strong and fierce, which is the terrain of the goat's destination out in the wilderness. Okay. Also, the fourth is some people, and this has become very popular, believes it is the name of the demon of the wilderness. Okay. So the idea is that sin is going back to where sin came from. Okay. I think in the book of Enoch, there is actually a demon whose name is Azazel. And so then that people think that then it refers to this. And so then the goat is being sent back to the demon of the wilderness. Okay. But if you think that, you cannot believe that this goat is a sacrifice to the demon of the wilderness, because that would go against everything else. Okay. So you have to be careful. Okay, well, my guess would be that would be the same idea as the demon of the wilderness. That's his name, okay. Right? Because Azel there, you're saying, is the name of the demon?
I think. It threw me with identified as the leader of the fallen angels.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't come across that specifically. Like, it's a very specific demon. I mean, I think the leader of the fallen angels is Satan, but... Yeah, so I don't know. I didn't run across that, but yeah. Okay, let's go to Isaiah 53. And can someone read for me verse 4 and then verse 6?
Surely our griefs he himself bore and our sorrows carried, yet we esteem ourselves esteemed. Yet we ourselves esteemed him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted.
Okay, verse 6.
All of us like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way. But the Lord has caused the iniquity of us all to fall.
Okay, Jesus is never in Scripture equated specifically with the scapegoat. Okay, but the idea, some people think that these passages in Isaiah are inspired. You know, I mean, the idea is there that our sin has now been placed on Christ, and he is then bearing our sin, just like the sin of Israel was placed on the scapegoat, and then the scapegoat bore the sin and out into the wilderness. Okay. No, it's not a for sure parallel. Yes, great point. Okay, so the two goats together are the picture of atonement, okay? Because the first goat pays the price of sin, okay? Right, because it dies. But then the scapegoat, then the sin is physically borne far away. So the price is paid, and now the sin is gone. Okay, that's the idea. And notice that the two goats journey in opposite directions. One goes east, and one, through its blood, goes west, okay? Because the blood of the goat is taken west into the Holy of Holies, right? So you are reconciled with God. The blood has been taken westward into the presence of God, and the sin has gone eastward, has been expelled. Okay, so together, the two goats represent the picture of atonement, the full atonement. Okay, our sin has been dealt with and is gone, but at the same time, then we can also be reconciled with God. It's not one or the other. It's both and.
So this slight parallel with Isaiah 53, 4, and 6, is that?
Just Jesus bearing our sin is
more,
the idea.
Is that more for, like,
the scapegoat?
Both the price paid?
Right.
Just the scapegoat?
Well, okay, because Christ is obviously going to do both. Right. Right? Christ is the perfect sacrifice. Yeah, I mean, yeah. But, I mean, all of Isaiah 53 does the whole picture of atonement. So, yeah, it's interesting. Nowhere in the New Testament does it ever draw the specific parallel of Christ and the scapegoat. Okay, but the scapegoat was still part of the Day of Atonement, and we know that Christ is the fulfillment of the entire Day of Atonement. And so I think it's more commentators looking for parallels between Christ and which I don't think it's necessarily wrong or bad, because, I mean, Christ is the fulfillment of the Day of Atonement. Okay, other questions? Okay, can someone read for me verse 23 to whatever, to 28, sorry, 23 to 28. Okay. Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, no, that's it. Okay. You read through 28, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So, basically, everyone who has a job now has to wash. Okay, so Aaron bathes. Okay, he removes his plain clothes, his white linen clothes, and he bathes. This is the second time he's had to bathe that day. Okay, because before he even made the sin offering or slaughtered the bull for the sin offering, he had to bathe before he put on the white clothes. Now he takes off the white clothes and bathes a second time. And then he puts on his regular clothes, his ornate high priestly clothes. Okay, now he can offer the burnt offering for himself and for the people. Notice also, too, that it says... in verse 25, then he shall offer up in smoke the fat of the sin offering. Up to this point, it is only the high priest has only killed the bull and the goat, okay, to get their blood, to collect their blood, to take into the Holy of Holies and to cleanse the holy place as well and the altar, okay? But now he makes a burnt offering and then he burns the fat of the sin offering. And if you remember, if it was a Joe Schmo that was offering a sin offering, the fat would be offered and then the priest got a piece of it. Okay? But if it was a bull, if it was an offering for the high priest or the entire nation, the rest of it had to be taken outside the camp and burned. Okay? So in this case, the goat and the bull are both taken outside the camp and burned. Right? Nobody gets to eat any of this. So when the burnt offering is made for worship, then the fat of the sin offerings is offered as well. So it's like nothing is actually burned on the altar until the altar itself is cleansed, which makes sense, right? Because I've cleansed the altar, now I can know I make a proper sacrifice, a burnt offering, and then also the fat of the sin offering. Okay, the burnt offerings, again, symbolize total consecration to the Lord. Israel has been made righteous. Okay, then verse 26 to 28, the man who led the scapegoat away and presumably threw him off a cliff, and the man who has to take the bull and the goat outside the camp to burn them, both of them have to bathe before they come back into camp. Okay. Everything has been just cleansed, okay? We don't want to become unclean again, all right? So everybody who has a part in this Day of Atonement bathes. The high priest, what? Outside the camp somewhere, because it just says before they come back in, so I don't know. Abigail. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm sure there was a spot that was prepared beforehand where they could bathe, but... it doesn't specifically say. And during the 40 years wandering, they were always in some place different. But then I assume that once the temple was built, then there might have been a permanent spot where they would bathe.
Are you talking about where Aaron will bathe?
No, the other two, right? The scapegoat guy and the guy who took the bull out and the goat out. They also have to bathe before they come back in. Okay. Questions? All right. Can someone read for me verse 29 to 34?
And it shall be a statute to you forever that in the seventh month, on the tenth day of the month, you shall afflict yourselves and shall do no work, either the native or the stranger who sojourns among you. For on this day shall atonement be made for you to cleanse you. You shall be clean before the Lord from all your sins. It is a Sabbath of solemn rest to you, and you shall afflict yourselves. It is a statute forever. And the priest who is anointed and consecrated as priest in his father's place shall make atonement, wearing the holy linen garments. He shall make atonement for the holy sanctuary, and he shall make atonement for the tent of meeting and for the altar, and he shall make atonement for the priests and for all the people of the assembly. And this shall be a statute forever for you, that atonement may be made for the people of Israel once in the year because of all their sins. And Moses did as the Lord commanded him.
Okay, so here we are told for the first time that this is specifically on the 10th day of the 7th month. And like we said, that's approximately October. We also said this, it is also Sabbath day. So no work was to be done, and no work was to be done even among foreigners. Okay, so if you were a foreigner living among Israel, there were still certain rules that you had to abide by, even if you did not believe, you did not convert. Okay.
Mike calls it practice
self-denial. Yes. Okay, so where it says you said afflict yourselves, right, mine says humble your souls. So there's different translations, okay? But the idea behind this phrase is that you have to be penitent towards God, right? You, as the nation, they had to humble their souls, afflict themselves, or what'd you say, Marion? Yes. Right. So it is most closely related to fasting. Okay. So you had to fast, but it was also an attitude of the heart. Okay. You had to be humble yourself, or the whole ritual means nothing. Okay. The Mishnah says that you also couldn't bathe. You couldn't use oil, like perfume on your body. You couldn't wear shoes. Not really sure why. And then you couldn't have sex on that day. Okay, it was all to show contrition, right? But the main thing was you were to fast to show that this is a holy day that God is going to forgive you of your sins. Okay, also, it says three times in this section that it's a permanent statute. Verse 29, verse 31, and then verse 34. Your translation said something different.
In 34?
Well, 29, this shall be
a statute, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, it shall be a statute to you forever.
Okay, statute to you forever. So three times it says permanent statute or something, some phrase like that. Okay? So when God says something once, it's important. If he says it three times, you better pay attention.
Ooh, is important too, but
yeah, but now it's three, okay? And that humble your souls or afflict yourselves, that is in there twice, verse 29 and verse 31. Okay? Then verse 32 to 34 just is a summary of the whole chapter. Again, what you're supposed to do. And again, it's a permanent statute. Everything is cleansed, the holy sanctuary, the tent of meeting, the altar, the people, the priests. Okay. So the model then is reset for another year. And they get to do it all over again next year. No, no, no. It wouldn't have fallen on Saturday every single year.
Oh.
It was just regardless of which day of the week Day of Atonement fell on, it was treated like a Sabbath day. You didn't work. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I'm sure sometimes it did fall on Sabbath, but even let's say it fell on Sunday. Well, then you'd have Sabbath and then another Sabbath day. All right, questions on that before we do Day of Atonement quickly in the New Testament? Okay, can we go to Hebrews 9? Can someone read for me Hebrews 9, 23 to 28?
For the copies of these things in the heavens to be cleansed with these, but the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these. For Christ did not enter a holy place made with hands, a mere copy of the true one, but into the heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. Nor was it that he would offer himself often, as the high priest enters the holy place year by year with blood that is not his own. Otherwise, he would have needed to suffer often since the foundation of the world. But now, once at the consummation of the ages, he has been manifested to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. And inasmuch as it is appointed for men to die once, and after this comes judgment, so Christ also, having been offered once to bear the sins of many, will appear a second time for salvation without reference to sin to those who eagerly await him.
Okay, so this passage in Hebrews is saying that, right, Christ's atoning work, his day of atonement, is far better than the day of atonement in the Old Testament, because they have to do it over and over and every year, right? They have to do a day of atonement, and they bring in blood that is not their own. Jesus paid with his own blood, and he's done, right? And when he comes again, it's not going to be in reference to sin, because he's already done that. That's over and dealt with, right? Now he's going to come to reign. So when Jesus died on his day of atonement, which wasn't Day of Atonement, it was Passover, right? But it fulfills the Day of Atonement. He starts a new system, okay? He brought us a whole new way of life and a whole new way to love God, right? And he achieves on the cross what the high priests were trying to achieve but never could fully achieve, right? All they could do was reset the model.
And at the same time, God hadn't revealed yet.
Right.
Right,
and this is not to say that the high priests were doing anything wrong. This is exactly what God had told them to do. It's just that when Jesus came, he did it perfectly, and he fulfilled it all. So now, right, the high priest gets to stop. He doesn't have to do it anymore, right? And I strongly believe that's why God had the temple destroyed in 70 AD, because it's a sign to the Jews, hey, this, what the model is done, because the fulfillment has come. So you don't need to do the model anymore. You're going to persist, so I'm going to take away. And they still try to do it, right? I mean, they still want to build a temple to restart everything again, because they don't believe the fulfillment has come, right? And like we said, the Jews fell too much in love with the model without realizing that there was going to be a fulfillment that would be so much better. Okay? We won't turn there right now, but Matthew 27, 50 to 51, right, talks about the veil being torn, right, when Christ dies. This was the veil, right, that the high priest could not go past except for once a year. So when Christ dies, right, that veil is torn, because man now has access to God. Okay, can we flip the page and go to Hebrews 10? And can someone read for me verses 19 to 25?
Since we have a great high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a sincere heart, in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near.
Okay, so this is our response to Christ's death, right? But you can see Day of Atonement language all through here, right? We get to enter the holy place by the blood of Christ, right? Only the high priest ever got to go into the holy place. He talks about the veil that is Christ's flesh. We have a great high priest. Right? Our hearts have been sprinkled clean, just like Day of Atonement. They had to sprinkle everything clean, right? Our hearts are now the ones that have sprinkled clean, and our bodies are cleansed, right? So what do? We are to stir one another to love and good deeds, and we are not to forsake our own assembling together, right? Why is church important? Because Christ died. Right? Because he is the fulfillment of the Day of Atonement. Because of what he did for us, right? Therefore, we go to church, right? And this is why we can't stop going to church, and we can't call online church church, and we can't shut our churches down. Because Christ died, he is the fulfillment of the Day of Atonement. And because of the work that he did, how do we respond? We respond in love to one another, stirring one another to love and good deeds. Okay, that should be our heart's desire.